It's red and kind of apple-y.
It's apple. Oh, it is.
I was thinking, you know, nearing Halloween here.
Ah.
Yeah, get into that festive frame of mind, and the closest thing we had was apples.
Although we're not going to a Halloween party.
No.
Our friend sucks.
Schlegel.
Sucks.
Is a douche.
Douche.
Letting us down.
What a drag.
Yeah. Okay. This is a podcast about bitching about your friends. And so we're starting it out right. No, actually, this is RPG Afterglow, where the dice get rolled, the story gets told, and we ponder the significance. I'm Jake.
And I'm Baco.
And this is episode 19.
Wow.
So we're definitely in the thick of things.
Yes, we're in the thick of a island with lots of trees.
Right. And it as you might be imagining, I don't know, maybe the thought occurred to you, beloved listener, but it definitely occurred to us at the table. Being out on these islands with mysterious things happening, making references to that show, Lost. And I couldn't help but not only make the obvious parallel, but this parallel of where we're at story-wise in a TV show in general, I think. But I'm just saying this from personal experience because I'm currently actually watching the show. I'm on like season 4. And I've noticed, at least in the past few seasons, there's kind of a ramp up as the season comes to a close. Kind of around like the last 5 episodes or so. It's like, all right, things have been happening. Plot has been thickening. But now it's kind of all leading to this. And it's not like boom, wow, bam, wow, ding in one episode. It's kind of like a 4 or 5 episode arc of like beginning to climax to resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that's what's going on here. I don't know. That was kind of my assumption going into it because we definitely had a story building experience.
I think we did. Yeah.
To draw out that parallel more that, you know, you don't want to get too explosive right off the bat when you finally get to this big destination.
Right. We sort of finished up with the trolls. They were moving a little bit still and we were still pretending like we didn't know fire destroyed them.
But Wolfie allowed the obvious example because, yeah, when we came back this week, it was on the shore.
I hope that's not a spoiler alert to anyone that fire destroys trolls.
Fire! They don't like it. And vampires hate garlic.
But you can't have a campaign without trolls. They're too great.
Yeah.
And you need that
satisfaction. Yeah. And Wolfie realized his mileage was perhaps up in that metagaming disguise of everything.
Yeah.
Because we start this session with us on the shores and all of the trolls, there were 3 of them.
Right.
Had been felled.
Yeah.
And was very nonchalant about showing that the one that Boddington attacked is singed and not doing anything. But smoking. But this one over here, you hear it kind of crinkle, crackle, and is trying to regrow and regenerate again.
And so I think some people were like still swinging at it and stuff, and they're
I don't know if that was just them playing into the whole. My character wouldn't know. Mike, come on, your character has an intelligence that's decent enough. You can read.
Yeah.
So after a while, and you're hacking at this thing like it's a tree, and Boddington's 2 bombs, 3 bombs took it out, and it's not getting up. You do have deduction. Reasoning. Yeah. You're allowed, and I think that's what Wolfie was saying. It's like you're allowed now to understand.
Right. And so I
my character wouldn't know. Well, he figured it out.
And then Violet threw what did I throw at it? One of those
fucking alchemy fire?
Yeah. I threw alchemy fire at it.
I don't know.
It was really funny because I think Violet was just like, because they were going around and Violet was still pissed at you.
Because I lashed out at you.
Yeah.
And I was very much in that frame of mind at the end of the session, last session. And I come sit down to this one and I'm like, oh, happy because it's Sunday and we're playing D&D. And, we're sitting down and we're dealing with these trolls right off the bat. And I go to turn to you and you're like, yeah! You just give me this stink out. I'm like, what? Oh, that's right. I was mad at you.
I was a dick.
I'm not really in a mad mood right now. Why? What are we doing? But, yeah, I think we were able to kind of make ends meet quick enough. I was able to explain this is tense. This is a big thing. This is a big deal. And I thought you had abandoned us. I don't know. We were able to.
Yeah. So
I was definitely like, no. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Violet is always going to try to conserve her spells. So I didn't want to just like waste the spell on him. Mm-hmm. So I used this alchemy fire. I had this alchemy fire. He was right there. I can't miss. So I threw the alchemy fire on it.
And yeah.
That little bit of fire damage was enough to keep that troll down.
And I wasn't mad at you for that reason. I was mad at you earlier, during the comment, because from Boddington's point of view, you disappeared.
Yeah.
But as I kind of phrased my apology, admiring your strategy, which is what initially I was mad at, but I hadn't realized you were up there flying all cool and style.
Right.
I thought you had gone your little planar shift thing.
No.
I kind of made up that Boddington didn't see you back 40 feet offshore. So, you know, it was, at least that was my catalyst to go, oh, that the flying thing was awesome. I just didn't know you were doing that. And I got nervous. We're a team.
Yeah.
Family. Go. Don't make them buy a monster.
You know, I want to get back to the, you know, this oversensitivity to metagaming, to very common monsters, you know, like orcs and trolls and things like that. One of the things about, I don't think troll is, but, you know, there's that local,
knowledge
local check that you can do.
And, do you know how that's actually explained?
Well, it's just that the reason, you know, it's like local, it's like anything that's in your immediate environment.
Right.
You know, so
your character's immediate environment.
Well, I don't think it's just like, oh, in your town, but I'm thinking like in your land, mm-hmm. you'll know something about these creatures. And it's like the troll, you know, like goblins and orcs.
Like if you're in Australia, you know something about kangaroos.
Right. And goblins and orcs are so common that I would really think that it's like, you don't really have to pretend like you don't know what goblins are.
But to bring the metagaming argument back, did any of us out of our party invest in knowledge local?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess I think that we come from we're in this medieval kind of a world. I can't imagine that we grew up and we had lived this whole time and we've gone to pubs and bars and we didn't hear tales and stories of all of these things.
Yeah.
Goblins, orcs, trolls, especially the more common ones.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have heard of these guys before.
It's like so many things, a delicate balance.
Right.
And where it's fun to be exposed to something new, to be able to play a first level, second level character and playing through their eyes, coming upon these classic beings for the first time. Kind of like you go to see a zombie movie. You know what zombies are, but it's the whole thrill of seeing the characters in the movie realize what zombies are for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, look at watching them freak out and not knowing how to come to terms with it. But yeah, it's you get too far to that extreme and then you're just playing through and slowing things down because here we are with these trolls on the shore and we're still slashing and hacking at them because we don't know that fire hurts.
And I thought, you know what would be a really kind of fun thing to do? Is like roll maybe a 1d4 or something and then just say, you know.
You mean you as the DM behind the screen?
Me as the DM is behind it. And it's like, okay, it comes, let's say it comes down to being Magnus or, and it's like Magnus.
Oh, the four-sided dice is which player out of your party.
Right.
And it's like, five-sided dice in our possible.
Yeah. And then just say, Magnus, you remember a story of these rubbery creatures that your uncle told you once. Nothing destroyed them besides fire.
Or in other words, I give you permission to metagame this creature that you are familiar with.
Exactly. You know, and that would be, I think would be great because it would be like, guys, I've heard of this before. Because then they could role play into it and have fun with it, but just relieve people from the whole thing of metagaming.
Yeah.
I remember like in Steve's World, I tried so hard not to metagame about dragons, but I knew everything about dragons. And I was just like, Steve, I want to go and try to find like any kind of books that I can read. And I said, there are no books. I maybe there's someone who I could go talk to.
Because right. Then on the other extreme, let's say you, Mako, didn't know anything about dragons.
Mm-hmm.
You suddenly got to this epiphany where you realized something that everyone else knew. How do you get to that point where you can justify your character knowing and learning something, metagaming or otherwise, about a monster when you already know it? No matter how long it takes you to get to that epiphany, people will still accuse you of metagaming.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Because you knew it, and you're just forcing them to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, I think people spaz a little too much about metagaming.
I'm glad we've kind of got, it's almost like a pendulum swinging.
Yeah.
Back in the day, we were very much the metagamers.
Right.
Not holding ourselves in check whatsoever. And now we kind of became aware of this whole term of metagaming, and we're throwing it out left and right, even when it doesn't apply. It's just metagaming. Anytime you're doing something outside of the whole narrative, it's metagaming. That's a product of our awareness of the term, but mm-hmm. now it kind of has to kind of swing back to the middle again.
Yeah.
For as much as we're paranoid and accusing people of metagaming, it's also kind of counterproductive.
Like it's a little rule lawyer.
Yeah.
I object. I think that's a metagame right there.
And it just slows stuff down.
It really does. And it's just like, you know, I think a good tactic for a DM is to be able to, everyone at the table is going to, I have a monster and I know everyone at this table is going to know when four orcs charge in this room, they're going to know they're orcs. And it's just like, well, hey, why not just let them know?
Why not leave the soul? It's almost like DM is so many things. One of which, in this instance, in this topic here, is Judge for the metagaming. He has the metagaming mallet.
Right.
I think, just, I don't know, kind of thinking abstractly and theorizing in our current state of metagaming, where we're kind of on that other extreme of being too paranoid about metagaming, and everyone's thrown around the term, leave it to the DM. Mm-hmm. Another player shouldn't accuse another player of metagaming.
Yeah, I think that's a really, yeah.
Because who are you to speak for the DM in that instance? What if the DM doesn't care? Or what if he's looking forward to something else? If you're going to bog down with this whole you don't know metagaming thing, it's almost stepping into that realm of interpreting his world or her world. If it happens and people are metagaming something and it's a problem to the DM, then that's where the DM steps in and goes, hey guys, you don't know that.
Yeah.
If it's borderline, if it's in the gray area and it doesn't matter and it goes and the DM's fine with it, then come on, player A.
Yeah.
Don't jump in there and try to slow shit down.
That's a really good state. Yeah, it's just like, you gotta let it go and let the DM, I mean, because there's a reason why, you're right, there'd be a reason why the DM is just saying, no, I'm not.
Especially the more experienced DMs.
Yeah.
Like, I did appreciate in my first couple of tries to have one of you guys step in and go, hey, so-and-so player, hold up.
Yeah.
And I would go, oh yeah, hold up. Because it's all your collective DM experiences helping me out.
There's a point where you need to back off and let the DM be the DM.
Because there have been times where you guys were making an effort and emotion to help out with something, and it's not your fault, because I really appreciated it that one time, but at this time when you're stepping in, I'm like, okay, no, it's fine. Just step down at ease, soldier, you know?
Yeah. And I don't think a player can raise their hand and go, metagame?
Yeah. Because that's our little call at our table. Is that when it's what precedes a question that we think borders on too much insight.
Yeah.
Or it borders on something outside of this suspension of disbelief experience.
Right. Yeah. But so getting back to it, the trolls, we discovered that fire dispatched them. That was surprising. But anyway, so they died. Even though I'm teasing, the trolls are like the greatest thing on the planet.
Oh yeah,
they're a lot of fun to fight. I don't care if I know that fire kills them. They're still a lot of fun to fight. You know, it's
those classic monsters.
Oh, it's just great. Yeah,
there's a reason why they show up in every edition of the bestiary.
Exactly,
or the monsters.
They're right
manual.
There. And the classics are the best. I think when the monsters get really weird, it's like, I don't know when I would use this incredibly weird ass monster.
Yeah, and that's like part of why I think we're coming back to this middle ground of the metagaming.
Right,
is that we love the monsters, and yet we don't know what part of it is the lovable part,
right,
being the DM and the player relationship. So maybe we're kind of coming back to, okay, we all know what these are.
Maybe a lovable troll. I love you.
All right. And he loves like a cactus. Yeah. And he just hugs the cactus every day and he heals.
You know, I was watching what is the zombie series?
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. And I was just like, what if there was like a really friendly zombie? Excuse me. Do you mind if I have some of your leg? No, you're using it still. I feel bad. Okay.
Is this awkward? This is awkward. Oh, dear. I'm gonna have to go find some stray dog again.
What a nice zombie.
No, I think it's called Fido. There's a movie where the zombie apocalypse has happened. I've never seen this movie. This is just from what I've heard about it. Humans have survived, I guess, but to the point where they've domesticated zombies. So they almost have them as pets and servants and whatnot. But I don't know what beyond that. But anyway, okay. I just thought it was supposed to be polite, but yeah.
So, but at this point,
we're on the beach with scorched trolls.
And I still have plenty of my fly spell left.
Yes.
So up in the air I went. And I scouted, and I sort of surprised Woofy. and he commented, and I was like, I forgot.
How long does that last?
I forgot that you had that ability. And and it lasts up to 7 minutes from right now.
And was that before or after it was labeled as misty and foresty and a thick canopy and veiled and
well, he was always mystery. Saying that it, you know, he was saying that the island was.
I thought so. I just wanted to do a little jab there.
Yeah, I know.
Suddenly it's veiled in darkness,
and I can't see a thing. But I did see a little bit of a very well beaten down path atop, and I realized there were some peaks on this.
Because this island was made up of like three central peaks, right? Yeah.
This is kind of very heart shaped based kind of looking.
Yeah.
Like. And so I came down, and while I was discovering the large path that was further up in the mountains,
Tobias
discovered a very small little path that was close by. So we could see the small path, but we couldn't see where the big path began.
Now, did the small path lead into the big path, or were they kind of
opposing
directions?
No, they were separate. That's what Violet was thinking. It's like, well, the small path would probably just lead into the big path, so let's go down the small path.
Right, or at least we'll get to the end of the small path and
And then Tobias can feel like he's in charge and like directing us. So,
which we know, all know, at least the two of us know, works for everybody.
It really does. Yeah. So we sent our new companion, Taro, to go out in front and scout.
Right. Because
Taro would go out in front and scout and then report what he had to find and come back and tell us.
Yeah. Well, he at least had the credentials of being well adjusted to the forest.
Yes. Which he really does.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, you can't deny the mechanics.
No.
But as we were talking about before, with that ability to sneak and be stealthy, it seems equally proportionate to also being very lacking in self-control. Yeah. I mean, I know anybody that's ever been that guy, that rogue, that player that's gone up and scouted ahead for the party, you've thought about it. I know you have. Yeah. We're like, okay, I'm here and I see the camp and I see the enemies. I'm going to try to just a pot shot at one. I'll be able to run back. It's fine. I just want to do something. Just one thing. I've been there. Have you been there?
I worry about being too far ahead of you and being like discovered.
Yeah.
And I roll a one and I like basically fall out of the woods.
Well, that's usually how it happens.
Right.
The dice telling their own story. All dice are in cahoots with that situation. They all have signed the contract, the dice of the world.
Yeah.
And when so-and-so is up ahead and they have to roll one, try to get a lucky shot in for whatever, all dice agree that we will all roll ones.
and my biggest worry is to be too far ahead of you guys and then all of a sudden be in the thick of fighting like six or seven things, especially in Steve's world.
But it's at that moment that particular player feels kind of cocky and kind of confident, or at least whatever the motivation is. And I think for Tara, it was just like, I fucking hate these guys.
Right. And
even though she didn't really know who these guys were.
He didn't. Going ahead, he spotted a small lizard-like thing.
And small, like the actual monster height,
it was
size.
It was exactly small,
gnomish.
Yep. So to report it to us, Taro fired at it.
A flurry shot,
several times.
Which is, again, the first thing you want as the party waiting to hear back, you want to have happen.
So
20 feet down
and going, several, and hit it, I do believe. Hit it a few times.
In my notes, I just wrote flurry shot, and beyond that, it didn't matter.
And then Taro told us that
face-palming at that moment.
Taro said there was a large lizard ahead to Violet that was like, I don't care. Because it's a lizard, you know, it wasn't like it's walking on its back feet and something like that. So Violet was just like, oh, okay. And then you guys were running ahead and you reduced yourself.
Yeah. I at that moment there was initiative.
Yes.
Because there's this thing down on the path. Taro said it was a large lizard.
Yep.
That's kind of funny because it's all relative. It's ginormous. It's probably taller than me. But
it's a dragon. Okay.
Yeah. We all rolled initiative, and on my turn, and I was kind of back with the rest of you guys, trying to catch up to where Taro was. I was kind of going for the mechanical stint. I had done my mutagen that enhanced my dexterity, so I thought, well, I don't know what these lizard guys are about. But, you know, if I reduce myself, then up goes the dexterity even further.
Right.
All the while, Wolfie had described the landscape as being thick with vegetation.
Yeah.
And movement is
hindered.
Movement is hindered.
Yeah.
It's at half movement, I think he said. Yeah. Not knowing this, I just went for the AC bonus and reduced myself and thought, okay, I've got enough people here being targets. I can shrink down. And at that point, Wolfie said, well, you're small enough to find that you can kind of fit between the branches and whatnot.
Because you're tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went from small to tiny, and Wolfie labeled that as not encumbered.
Right.
Not hindered.
Encumbered. Yeah. Encumbered movement.
And so I was suddenly given this happy bonus of being able to be, you know, it does balance out too because my movement isn't huge. So it allowed me.
Does it reduce it? Do you get reduced down to like 10?
I think the movement stays the same.
Okay. All right.
To be able to move at full movement at my 15 feet per round. Because I'm holding my backpack and everything else. It didn't give me that much of an advantage, but it still felt nice.
Yeah.
So I kind of get off the beaten path because I'm no longer relying on that particular path to just get the full movement.
Yeah.
Because we did have full movement on the path. And so I thought I might try to get a different angle, a different perspective. And so I move around and I see another lizard. He's kind of hiding down. And I think, okay, this might be an advantage. Or this might be an opportunity to try to make friends, like Boddington always kind of likes to do. At this point, Taro had seen this lizard, fired at it. Other people come along. They might be scared. They might not be hostile, just like those lizards that zapped us and every other hostile that Boddington thought wasn't hostile. And that's kind of where I got up in the whole rotation. But then as things panned out, it did turn into be a lot more hostile.
Yeah, because you really didn't get a chance to make friends with that one there because Tobias moved ahead.
Right, on his turn. Because I just moved in to try to start talking to somebody.
Yeah.
And yeah. And
Tobias moved ahead and moved ahead of Taro because that lizard that Taro was shooting at, he went off into the woods and hide a little bit more. So
it's almost like they were baiting us.
Yes. Tobias bravely moved forward and got snagged up into a
snare.
A snare. Right.
That required a reflex 25, I believe.
Yeah.
And at 7th level, that's pretty decent.
Yeah.
But he failed.
Yeah, he failed. And at that time, still, I mean, because of all this difficult going down the path, Violet barely was able to get up to where they were. Magnus charged forward because that lizard that you saw, he split and went right up into the tree. Like, he could climb easily in this kind of wooded area terrain.
Yeah. And this is all thick, except for this path we're on. So we're kind of vulnerable here. We're left to be on this path, except for me, who's down here trying to get some sort of an upper hand.
Right.
Taro went for the rope shot. There, poor Tobias was hanging.
Oh, yeah. They cut the rope.
Right. Taro thought, I could shoot my bow and arrow.
Or crossbow.
Oh, that's right. Crossbow.
Yeah.
Well, nevertheless, first shot missed, but second shot, I think it was AC 30, wasn't it?
It was pretty.
It was ridiculous.
But
got it on the second try, but only managed to kind of sever it a little bit.
Wasn't able to take it completely
out. Yeah, so he dropped a couple of feet, but was still sitting there hanging.
Right, yeah.
Magnus was able to get in there and do a melee attack and show that they had some sort of a damage reduction.
Pretty intense damage reduction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd think they'd have to, being such little guys.
Because, I mean, Magnus hacked pretty deep.
Yeah.
But it was able to just reheal all of it. Yep.
And at this point, I was able to try to start talking with them. Mm-hmm. I decided to use my spell-like ability, Speak with Animals, and try some sort of lizard talk, and was able to kind of overhear some sort of draconic.
Yeah.
I said something along the lines of, it's best if you just back into the woods for all of us. And they kind of gave like that curious look and cocked their head to one side and didn't show any signs of backing down. So, okay, there it goes. And we, you know, in their defense, we've shown plenty of signs of aggression too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They could have run away, but...
Yeah, but I mean, they have snares. They were definitely hostile. And they
holding won. The ambush.
And it's funny because even at this point, Violet was just looking at him like, maybe we can just scare him off into the woods. Not really worried about it. But then one of them like swatted at Tobias.
Because, he's trying to wriggle free now.
Yeah.
And it comes scurrying down the rope at him.
And it swatted at him and drained magic out of him. So that's it, to Violet. And it's like, oh, no, you guys are dangerous.
Yeah, it required a will save, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tobias failed, because, it's Wolfie asking Tobias for a save, immediate pessimism leads to inevitable failure.
Yeah.
I think Wolfie had him choose a prepared spell at random. Or did he have him choose? He lost his spell.
He lost one of his first
I don't know
spells.
How he had him choose it. If it was random or it was his choice.
I think it was random. I don't know. I was just freaked out that there were slung spells.
Yeah, when you to not metagame, for Violet to look and see, oh shit, that thing swiped and I saw it somehow, maybe with a spellcraft check, drain some
magical potential. Well, he even said it was like it sparkled on his hand or something like that.
Like he held it in his hand.
Yeah, there was some visual thing.
Yeah.
And Violet's smart enough to go, screw that.
Yeah, I don't have anything to do with these guys.
Right. At that point, Tobias wiggled free out of the rope.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, one of these saves that he is able to get himself out of that rope and he fell 10 feet to the ground with a oof, few hit points away.
All right.
Then the creatures, they took off into the woods.
You were able to defend your magic essence yourself, though, I think.
I was far away. I wasn't going to go in there. No way.
You threw in like a fireball.
Well, what happened was that they were in the woods and...
Oh, they
thought
later?
They thought they were hidden, but I was able to spot them.
Ah.
Because one of the things I do actually have points in is nature, because of my...
your star soul.
My star soul. So I was able to see them. And I was like, well, I used my fireball wand and I shot a fireball in there and it was a good fireball.
Yeah.
And it killed both of them. So that was
I almost see it as like the Jawas from Star Wars that are trying to like scavenge through, and then R2 with the little laser. They can run it off.
So the last one, he ran away. Taro took chase. He ran across like the treetops and Taro got on George and started to try to fly out of the canopy, the woods, but was unable to break free or something.
Well, yeah, it was a thick ceiling, and he was also able to discover that that wasn't the only sling that they had set.
Oh, yeah.
But fortunate for the little halfling,
he was able to
the reflex save and the dice was in his favor.
Yeah, yeah.
But we scared them off from what seemed to be their camp.
Mm-hmm.
But who's to know what these little lizard folk live like?
They had a treehouse.
We found a treehouse.
Yeah.
Not too much farther up the path.
No.
And up in the tree it was. You employed spider climb, if I remember, to get up there. Because, I mean, with all of us and our mundane ropes and hooks and other physical heavy cumbersome objects, it's almost like that line that Schlegel had back in the day when he was whatever class that employed it. But yeah, I have just the spell for this situation.
Yeah, that's what it was. I had just the spell for this situation. Yeah,
and in his typical secretive nature, we didn't know he had that spell, but there it was, and yay, hallelujah, you know? Because it didn't have that effect. We didn't know we had it, and suddenly it was a really pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
But this was more of like, oh, I need to get up there. I have just the spell for me.
Yeah.
Spider climb, here I go. Aren't I awesome?
But I realized I could cast that spell on other people. I think I'll cast on
what
Magnus.
Allows you to do that?
It's a touch-based spell. So if I touch somebody, I can.
It didn't require a certain.
No.
Like for me and my discoveries to be able to share my extracts.
No. I have, a lot. Like, you think even like visibility, that's a touch-based spell. So I can make somebody else invisible.
So instead of giving it to yourself, you could go boing.
Uh-huh.
It still spends it the same way, but you could.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. But, we all are trying to climb up there. So.
Right.
And you're going to give it to yourself.
Yeah. So I went up there and then I helped Magnus up there.
Well,
I
got you lowered the rope down.
Lowered the rope down. We worked that out. And in spider climb is pretty amazing spell.
Yeah.
Lasts for a really long time. And, you get a climb speed. You can do a lot of cool things. So
I think it's designed to be employed in like a cave delve.
Yeah.
Where it's not just like, in this combat, I need to be able to climb up here. Boom, in 5 rounds of the combat's done or it's done.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're the one that might go, I don't know how we're going to get out there. Let me go scout it out.
Yeah.
There's potential in combat, obviously. And there's rules that get into the details of that. But there's still also just the fun ability to be able to be the one to slither on down there.
Right, yeah. We got up in the tree. And
there's various baskets.
And Tarot took up watch up in the tree. I got to a branch and was maintaining watch up there, concerned that the little lizard creature would come back. Tobias hung out at the base of the tree, and the three of us then looked through the stuff.
We found some baskets that had various things, berries, mushrooms, bat wings, and the like, but the big highlight was stardust. There was a huge basket filled with stardust.
Is it star powder?
It's stardust today. All right? Deal with it.
It's great.
I don't even care anymore.
I know.
And there were some other various things, a scroll case, some gems, short sword, good basic loot.
Some magic in there.
Potions as well. I was able to identify as bull strength, gaseous form, and a 4d8 plus 7 huge healing potion.
Right.
There was a little bit of contention over who got the bull strength between Tobias and Magnus. And so I invented this little game of, okay, here's my bone dice. Roll the bone dice and roll the number I'm thinking of. And Tobias won.
Oh, good.
But then Magnus got the healing potion, which is a consolation prize, which these two are going to want to figure out who gets what spell. And I'm just going to jump in and go, hey, look, these are mine. I discovered them. And you're going to get them this way. It's going to be a dice game that's going to take 30 seconds and we're going to move on.
Yeah, really.
Rather than talk about this for too long.
So there's a sword, and it's a pretty good sword because it's a +1 short sword that you could use the stand ability once a day, which is like if you're tripped, you can stand as a free action, which is great.
Without attacks of opportunity.
Without attacks of opportunity. But unfortunately, we can't really use it.
Not you or I, right? Because we're small.
Not us. And Taro can't use it, really. And
if I gave myself in large person, I could ask Magnus maybe to toss it to me. And there I'd go, attacking with my +0 strength.
Right. And then, so Taro has it. I mean, not Taro, but
Magnus.
Magnus. Because unfortunately, it's a normal-sized weapon. So a small creature would have a -2, which negates the +1. So
yeah, and then some. So we'll just consider it a large dagger.
Yes.
Small moves.
You didn't go there,
small
man.
Small moves.
You didn't go
I
there.
Did. Yes, I did.
Okay. So then.
So we rest in the treehouse.
We did.
What
a place to, it's good. It's a nice shelter. We're safe, so we rest up there.
And if ever Tara was at home in this whole adventuring scope of things, out in the forest, sure, there's walls and a roof, but it's in a tree.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
Nothing, really. We did pretty good for that night. Right. But we did. There was
something that happened on Taro's watch.
Yes.
There was some sort of strange luminescent effect coupled with leaves blowing and this stir in the middle of the night. Much to your satisfaction, he chose to wake you to share this strange occurrence.
Right. And so there was a magical effect on the leaves above us.
Above the house.
Like above the house, yeah. So basically like the ceiling. And they were depicting kind of like crude images of the islands. And
like a big overhead map.
Yeah.
It almost reminded me of the, from The Hobbit, the maps that the dwarves had.
Oh.
And it had that one part where if you held it up to the moonlight at a certain point in the Midsummer's Night's whatever, and Elrond was sitting there going, hey, no, look, it happens to be that night now. Let's look what it says. And that's when it revealed something.
Ah.
We had a map of the islands.
Yeah.
But then it revealed certain islands that had little stars on them. And there was also another island entirely not on our map.
Right.
That was also highlighted there, too.
And the island that we had showed lizards, little lizards and big lizards. So we were under the impression that they were talking about the trolls and these strange little creatures that we fought. It also pointed out that there were particular islands that were in this cluster of islands that moved together.
And those were the ones that were starred,
yeah,
from what I understood.
Mm-hmm. So from that, we got an understanding of what was going on.
At least geographically.
Yes.
What's the significance of these islands moving together? Why does it matter to us? We don't know, but it's something to know, and that could come in handy.
Yes. And actually, I think I woke up to Tobias as well, two witnesses, because we needed different knowledge checks, and you know, just with a couple of knowledge checks, we were able to figure some things out.
Yeah, it's definitely a player intuition to go, here's something, we don't know what it means, let's get as many knowledge checks as we can against it, because
who else, whatever
the DM is willing to reveal is for the best.
Yeah.
Because even in those adventure paths that I was playing, like, there were certain things where it's like, okay, here are certain knowledge checks based on the role, here's what you can reveal. And they were very different in the replies.
Yeah, which is nice. I like that, yeah. We went through the rest of the night, and there was not any more incidents, and then
you were able to descend ever so lightly with your feather fall. I only bring it up because I looked up and saw you a little too proud once again, so I used my little ghost sound and gave a little gnome fart upon your descent.
Well, and it was kind of a little embarrassing because I jumped too soon. Everyone else is still stuck up in the tree, and it should have been the last person to jump out. And it's like, oops.
Yeah,
sort of fucked that up.
It's morning time. Stretch. Yay!
Sometimes I forget. I have magic, and I like using it.
Whee!
Yeah. So they
realized that
there was kind of a struggle to get down from the tree.
Yeah. Well, what else is new?
Yeah.
Point A to point B.
Yeah.
Geez, we're spending too much time.
Here's a rope.
Here's a rope. Come on.
Yeah.
But we also looked at the scope of the evening and the scope of our experience on this island. And I don't know what really drove us to finally do it, but we decided to page, for lack of a better term, the ship that brought us down. We had a ring.
Yeah, we have a ring. Yeah.
Of message.
A message, right.
Yeah.
And I think it was that we pretty much got everything off the sound that we needed. But while the ship was coming in, we chose to investigate
that bigger other path
that I saw. Up into the mountains we went and realized that the path kind of, there was like paths that wavered all, you know, went all over the whole island.
Right. And all over the three peaks of the mountains.
Right.
But we stuck to the one that we had pursued.
Well, that was the one too that someone did a tracking. And we recognized that there's one where that was much more heavily matted down than the other ones. So that was the one we followed.
And soon enough, we came upon some boulders and some big rocks. Is there a difference between big rocks and boulders? I don't know. But we were able to decipher that they didn't just happen to be here.
Yeah.
They were put here, thrown here, cast here by big people. Again, I think this is bringing it back to our initial exposure. It's like, we're inclined to think, there's a boulder, there are mountains, we're on a trail, there's going to be some fucking giants or something throwing these, you know, these huge boulders down. But, and it was kind of spelt out plainly enough. And we continue on to kind of a clearing where there's a series of caves.
The boulders were dug out into caves. So there was these large rocks there, and Tara went ahead of us to scout.
Great idea.
Did Tara come back and tell us? I don't know. I can't remember.
I don't think it actually boiled down to the Taro being ahead of us thing. We were more or less a party at this point. We all got to this clearing of the big rocks that were dug out.
Yeah.
Kind of like hollowed out eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what they were. So basically, there were huts.
Yeah.
And
of stone.
But I didn't know that. And so I casted my Unseen Servant, had my Unseen Servant hand hold a candle.
Yeah, because we're all looking in these expecting the big, bad, scary thing.
Well, I was expecting them to go down into like a big dungeon of like interlocking things. No. they're small little rooms. And but so I had my Unseen Servant with a candle and Steve's casting light on his sword. We walk in and we hit the other wall.
Yeah. You're like, oh, it's a hollowed out Titan turd.
It's a rock. And it's hollowed out. I'm like, oh, okay, all right.
What about the great depths below?
Because the way you described it, because it was like, I thought for sure it was like someone was like, we're going to go down, and we're going to go into this intricate
maze. Right, maybe find a planar shift, and all of a sudden we're in the astral plane again. No.
I was expecting mazes with traps and things like no, and especially I was expecting more trolls, but there were no trolls either.
Nope, just clunk. A wall.
So there was a mat, and they had pictograms, and
but it was a series of little rooms of exposition.
They were like little troll bungalows. Troll bungalows.
Well, the night was winding down.
Yeah,
in the scope of our session,
right?
And so each of these rocks, they were dug out by some formidable claws, for one. But one of them had a polished skull, some antlers that Taro seemed possessed to take. Mm-hmm. It's like, you realize they're as tall as you.
Yeah.
You're going to hold on to that? All right. Yeah. So, go for it.
Well, but they wound up in your cart.
Yeah, I know.
Taro needs a donkey.
Taro needs to show gratitude after this. It's an alchemical buggy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's not some sort of freaking back end of a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Throwing what you will. Precious glass alchemical atoms back here.
With super cool, like little
glitters when you open it up. Yeah, yeah. And I don't need a hood ornament. Yeah. Thank you very much. Anyway. Another one had a skeleton, some partially excavated, perhaps.
I think it was eaten.
It was like fresh, kind of.
Well,
because he drew it out to kind of look like a Jurassic Park sort of a excavated thing. But then again, who knows? Yeah, maybe it was a prey.
Well, I think the trolls are very neat, and they just put the bones back where they. It's like I ate everything off this, and I put it back there.
They're regenerative and susceptible to OCD.
Oh, the wrong rib. Put it back behind and match it up with the spine. You know better.
But regardless, Magnus and I kind of took a tooth or in a claw just for our collection.
Either it's one of these dinosaurs they're talking about.
Dinosaurs or a
dragon, but it's a pretty small dragon.
It was.
And it didn't have wings.
Maybe they picked their teeth with them.
Yeah. Maybe they didn't put those back.
Yeah.
Maybe those had antlers and were all super confused. I don't know. And then there was a pictogram too, that the trolls are kind of on the same path as the other little lizard ones.
Right.
It wasn't as elegant in a kind of a little
The illuminated image of the little lizard men was paralleled with this scratching image on the wall of this one cave.
And so we just know that there are particular islands that move together.
And this one revealed another island that wasn't part of the little lizard men's survey. So we're kind of walking around now, kind of relaying information to one another because we're all, in typical fashion, just like back to the mansion when there's all those rooms and we're like, we all go to a room. Here we are with all these little caves. We all go to a cave. Never mind if something bad happens.
I thought
we're all
stayed separated. Together pretty good, didn't we?
Oh, again, baby steps.
Yeah.
We're improving. In that point of relaying information and hesitancy, somehow Taro gets distracted with hunting ambitions.
Well,
I don't know how the deer came up.
I think Taro was looking at the wood line or...
The edge of the woods?
The edge of the woods, keeping lookout, and he saw a deer.
That's an encounter for the entire party to embrace.
And you see a deer moving through the woods. I shoot it. So, Taro shot it.
Yeah, and Wolfie asked for initiative, and we all kind of go,
because it's a deer. But he hit the deer. I think the deer got away.
Yeah, but he came back with some rabbits, I think.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and this is one of these times where it's like me as a DM, I'd be like, you shot a deer. It's time for teaching lessons. I don't know.
What am I? It's lesson? Time for me to turn your armor into grain, metaphorically speaking.
But I thought it would be really, you know, just like if you shot some deer that was not really necessarily going to be part of the main thing. But
I would almost be compelled to make that deer into a formidable and kind of like you had,
right? Yeah,
you know, like that is a god posing as a deer.
Yeah, yeah.
And you shot at it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna fart golden rays of death at you.
you don't have that. I think it would be, you know, like what if he followed and realized, you know, he shot a nymph. And the nymph is like, then, you know, one of the things that the nymph has is that they can look at you and charm you.
Yeah, but then you're getting caught into this whole, there's four other people at the table and you're having this little side adventure with the
halfling
that ran off and you're trying to teach it a lesson and everyone else is going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You gotta be careful.
But it's fun. I like where you're going with that. Yeah. But it's just.
But you can make it quick, though. You could like
charm as long them. As you can make it quick.
And the charm is like, that's right. I don't want to hurt things anymore. Or maybe just have the nymph say, free yourself of all your clothing. So then Tara comes out running out naked. That would be funny.
And then everyone would be able to role play into that. You're dirty everywhere, aren't you?
I'm free.
I love this sea breeze. I can see there's more than one reason they call you halflings.
We leave this our little troll bungalows behind, and we go back down to the coast, and
we have kind of a semi encounter with a narwhal.
It's not a narwhal,
but that's what our suspicions are. I don't know how we were led in that direction.
That's just Megan she goes, I like narwhals, yeah. And then she starts looking
maybe
up
narwhals.
Maybe it was
narwhals. Wolfie like going, oh yes, narwhal, sure, yep, there it is.
It's a narwhal, but it wasn't a narwhal.
But I guess the generalized takeaway is we heard this thing off at sea. Mm-hmm. I learned a lesson from Mako. Not going to be the last time. But it definitely was a fun role-playing experience.
It was.
I was abusing the rules. And that's what Mako pointed out to me. I hear this thing out at sea, and I want to talk to it. So it's a new day, so I have Speak with Animals again, and I have Ghost Sound. And like I was saying before, Ghost Sound grows proportionately louder in its potential as you level up. So I thought I would do Speak with Animals, and then do Ghost Sound to be able to make a loud noise over my talk with this animal out at sea. Seems all fair and good, until Mako pointed out in the spell chapter, whenever I've consulted the spell chapter, I go, okay, spell chapter, where's my spell? But in this instance, I go to it and I look, Ghost Sound. The school is illusionary. And one thing I've always overlooked that was my learning curve in this particular interaction with the wise Mako. Following illusion is another word in parentheses. And all these other spells have these other crazy words in parentheses after their school. And, you know, I thought they were just there for color. The thought that they were just there for flavor. Like, you know, transmutation, polymorph. Sounds great, you know. Enhancement, compulsion. I'll go with it, sure. But this one, Ghost Sound, is illusion figment. Mako pointed out to me that figment actually has a definition and particular things that follow along with it. Not least of which is a figment that includes audible effects cannot duplicate intelligible speech unless the spell description specifically says it can. So that's where I kind of abuse the rules. I'm like, I'll make Speak with Animals be super loud and I'll talk out at the sea. And it was definitely fun in our ignorance to be like, hello, narwhal. What are you doing out at sea? And it talked back a little bit back and forth. And the bottom line of the conversation was, wait, you sound tasty. And I went, all right, we're done. And that was the extent of it. Yeah. Right. Because I thought this mystical creature, whether or not it was a narwhal, maybe it could give us some insight into the other islands. I don't know. I would want to talk to it out there with its great insight. But nope, it just was looking for a snack. So that was the end of it. And I guess for the best that we weren't able to glean any grand information.
Right.
Out of it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm totally on my own in this, but check out the beginning of the chapter of spells. It's worth reading.
It's like that. It really defines a lot of things. Like I know that there was a point in one of our campaign worlds where someone started to develop their own concept of how transferring scrolls to your spell book worked. And it was pretty horrible because you had a one-shot deal and then you lost the spell. So either you could cast the spell that you bought or you could try to scribe it in your spell book and win, or try to scribe it in your spell book and really lose.
And lose everything.
And lose everything. Fireball the whole thing. You know, and it's like, scrolls are expensive. And then later you read the magic section and it explains, no, you don't lose your scroll.
And that's another instance of that pendulum swinging.
Yeah. Anyways, all the same though, it was pretty fun to have the conversation, you know, with the Naru. I did miss something. When I was flying, I saw a combat between a ship.
Oh, that's true.
Two ships.
Way at the beginning of the session.
Right.
When we were still dispatching the trolls.
Yeah. I saw two ships fighting and they were casting magic at each other.
Was it a particular type of magic you could identify?
It was like lightning and fire, I think. Yeah. And they were like, I don't know if I saw creatures flying.
I have it written down that you saw flying beasts.
No, I did.
Off to the southwest.
Okay. Right.
Are you sure it was ships fighting, or was it a ship fighting the flying beasts?
You know, I can't say for sure. I thought it was two ships. Anyways.
Yeah.
When our crew came and got us.
After this conversation with the narwhal thingamabob.
I don't want to say it's a narwhal. That's terrible because we don't know what it was. I think.
And a narwhal just seems utterly impractical anyway.
I don't know.
Like, how did you get that horn? What do you spear things with it?
I don't know.
It seems like you'd get it caught on some coral.
I think it's for breaking ice.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because there's ice everywhere here.
No, but then now we're living... okay, all right. But these are... they're magical islands.
Knowledge so. Nature!
We got onto the ship and...
The crew was worried.
But they were freaked out because I think I brought up the realization, you know, the whole thing that I saw combat. And so they think the elves are like getting crazy and killing people.
Right. Wolfie definitely amplified the fact that elves are rare to human experience and there's a certain paranoia.
And they're kind of spazzes. That's kind of a Violet's thing. Elves are
we've come upon one elf in our whole campaign so far, and it was an elf that was like, hey, those elves are kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I am well adjusted to human life.
Right.
I've got 20 years, but don't hold it against me, man.
Yeah.
Was well aware of the stigma that came with his appearance.
Yeah.
And that was kind of where we led into the following session, I believe.
But George went up and did some investigation, scouting around, and came back down.
Because there was talk of this crash site. Whoa. But before that, you decided to kind of put the crew at ease.
Yeah, so.
I
was doing a dance. You're right. Yeah. I was doing a dance. Right.
We were dancing the fit dance.
Yeah. And that,
if you want to know what we're talking about, click like on our Facebook and I put a link up of this Japanese gum commercial that's totally Boddington and Violet and doing their little dance.
You know what? It's funny because we like to like say particular nationalities are particular races and like
the elves are French. The dwarves are Spanish, at least according to Megan.
I don't think that's very good. We haven't really pinned
down. I almost imagine dwarves as being like Russian.
Yeah.
We come to dig the stones.
Yeah.
And you will come to my ex. It will give you special meaning.
But we really thought it's like, you know, the gnomes, they're really Japanese.
Yeah.
You know? So it was like, because they're colorful.
The Japanese that are in like pop culture, like super candy, colorful advertisement.
I could really see it. I think it's really.
Well, they're, you know, it's just like the more we make these parallels, the more it's like, these guys are fucking racist.
I know, it's horrible. No, but
just think generalized, playful stereotypes. You know,
these guys are.
Come on, we're not gonna like offer a Japanese person an enlarged person potion just so we can talk to them. Come on. No matter where you are in the world, French means something. Japanese means something. Even when you're Japanese.
Yeah. An American means something. I don't know.
I mean, I got such a kick out of the Triplets of Belleville, that animated feature, where it's mostly without words.
Okay.
And check it out. I won't try to give you the synopsis, but it takes place in France. And there's a lot of caricaturing going on. And it ends up in America. And it's just these blimps of people walking around. Balloon-shaped. And
that's us.
That's us. Burgers and fries. I don't care. But anyway, so, yeah. I don't know. If that gains us any credibility.
But I would like to be a gnome. I don't know.
Anyway, and then, you know, yeah. Exactly. But, seeing the commercial made it all the more tangible.
He's like, that's right.
Okay, I could chew this gum and go to Japan in a moment of gnome.
What? Okay. No. But it's perfect. But I rolled a one.
What? Okay. Sorry. What did you roll a one for again?
I rolled a one for basically entertaining the troops.
Right.
You know.
Doing a little gum dance.
Apparently I'm Marilyn Monroe, but I don't know. Or Bob Hope. One or the other. But I was like, oh God, I rolled a one on this. And luckily,
Tobias was there to point out your ability.
Yeah. And I was like, yay. Yeah. So I rolled it again and it rolled quite high. So I was able to calm the troops.
Yeah. It ended up being an 18 with your Eagle Splendor and whatever else bonus. He had a 24 on the roll.
Right. It had 24. So it worked out really well.
So I don't know why we went on such lengths for this, like, one dice roll, but it will be crucial
It's that fit Japanese commercial. Yeah. It's like, you have to watch it because
if you don't want to click on our Facebook thing, just search Japanese gum commercial and click any of them that say fit, F-I-T.
You will smile. You can't help it. It's impossible.
Yeah, just keep it on your favorites, on your history, and when you're having a bad day, just click it and watch it.
And feel better.
And feel better.
Where we ended up, we did go to check out
scene of that violence.
Yeah, the sunken ship.
Flying beasts and whatnot.
You know what? It's a scuttled ship. That's what it is, because it's half sunken in water. It's scuttled. We're right there. And we noticed that there was a lot of really nice arrows around. So we're right at this ship. This island that just appeared is in front of us. We have either the option of going to that island or investigating the ship that's in front of us. Most likely we investigate the ship that's right in front of us.
Especially because we saw the wreckage that it's in portrayed by a beautiful iPad image with the enhancing description of plenty of white arrows littered about, dexterously placed, with the implication of one-shot kills.
Yeah.
And I know if Floyd was in this campaign, he'd be like, what are these guys about?
Yeah.
But still, there's that intrigue of not knowing who these elves are. I think if there was ever a diplomatic advantage, it would be like having this party being like two gnomes. Just imagining these hostile elves, and this party has a good number of little people, and we're all like, hey!
They'll love us.
They won't kill us immediately. Yeah. At least that's what I'm going for.
We got a dance.
There's the spectrum of they'll love us, and they won't kill us immediately. We'll fit somewhere in between there, I hope.
They'll just kill Tobias. So that's where we are right now. I think it's
And again, like, I don't know if I was doing too much vague talk about the whole scope of things, paralleling to the Lost narrative, but I kind of see this episode as like the beginning of the end of the season.
Yeah.
We have definitely been looking forward to these islands for quite some time. And now that we're here, it's going to be its own little arc.
Yeah, I think we're ramping up speed.
You're right.
Yeah.
And what it's all leading to, we don't know. Kind of got some little bits and pieces, some fragments, some glimpses on these islands as a whole, and what ones work together and stay in formation, and which ones are hidden, and these other parties out there, and how they all come together will be a matter of adventure.
Yes.
So we will leave you now, looking forward to the great, neat, clean, round number of episode 20.
Yes, wow.
Signing off, I'm Jake.
And I'm Makem.
And this is RPG Afterglow.
Red.
Yeah.
What did you put in here, like giddy juice?
Giddy juice?
Yeah, we were just like having a lot of fun.
No, it was that raspberry liqueur. Oh, and I guess the more like primary in color a liqueur is, the more giddy it gets you. That's my theory. Obviously. Anyway.